Blog Talk Radio.
Because we want to stay alive. And I guess Rabbi Isaac Vitton still wants to stay alive while he's hearing his music. But sorry, Rabbi Isaac, we're going to have to turn it down. And here we go, turning it down. That was the end of Here Comes the Time from the wonderful album Generation Redemption from Blessed Brother and prayer partner from the famous Frankel Shul here in Karnites, and also the president of the Beit Mazel Shul. Blessed Souls, this is now a rather impromptu presentation of Soul Class number 399. Whose presence is divine, and we'll be focusing today on the Torah concept of Shekhinah, divine presence. But before we go further into our program, we want to wish a healthy and a speedy recovery for Rav Yehuda Glick, who so coolly was shot yesterday in the land of Israel after giving a class in Torah by a person lacking proper knowledge of what to do with the great gift all of us have been given, which is known as the divine image, the Tzelem Elohim. That being said, Bessels, we'll be plucking inspirations from a Hasidic discourse that was also known as a Maamar, delivered by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, almost 64 years ago. So here we go, blessed souls. In ancient generations of righteous souls, there were individuals like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and reaching a culmination at that time with the righteous Levite prophet Moses, who were blessed and anointed to help reveal Shekhinah, the divine presence in this world. And we have a caller, and we have our Rambam teacher and activist, the seminary of the teachings of Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Don. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. Dennis, in this very short impromptu version today, we're talking about whose presence is divine. Program content today is focusing on the Torah concept of Shekhinah, divine presence, a concept that people are becoming more aware of, still too many people are not aware of. And we're talking, I just started before you called in, the idea that there were individuals like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and culminating with the righteous Levite prophet Moshe, who helped reveal the Shekhinah, the divine presence, meaning to reveal an awareness for human beings that God is here. He's not up in the heavens above, although there is a realm of the Creator which is, but also he's revealed down here. The truth is the Creator is not found in physical space as we perceive it, but rather that since he is the source of space, he dwells within all realms of creation in a very concealed fashion, which is not really detectable to us. The only reason why we learn that of his presence at all levels of creation is that we've been told by the prophets that the Creator is here. And we're talking about an understanding, a monotheistic understanding or perception, that the Creator is not any shape, form, and is not associated with sensing things as we do, because we basically sense things through our five senses and through our nervous system and through our respiratory system, our digestive system, and even our system of how we eliminate. That's how we start to perceive and we feel, and we feel vitalized, and sometimes we feel less than vitalized. But we have to do it on a very physical level. So we only relate to space as a physical entity, even though space that we walk around in is actually an emptiness of matter. So in order we just, you know, we're not just stuck in a rock or a wall or drowning in an ocean. Your take on this, Dennis, that there is a understanding, and I claim for myself before anyone else, we have an understanding, but not a full understanding of understanding the presence of God being everywhere, but his being everywhere is not in the same sense as we as human beings can be everywhere at once, as much as a human can be.
Well, we live in a world that's partly physical and partly spiritual. The spiritual part comes in from your mind, your imagination. When you say there is a God, it's something that you have to recognize in your mind, because you're not going to physically see it, you're not going to physically hear it, and there's no way of putting your finger on it. But the thing is, how did we all get here? How's the universe holding together? How come the sun just keeps on giving off heat and it doesn't look like it's going to stop? Those things are physical reminders of us that there is a greater being who created all this. So even though you don't see him, there are unanswered questions that humans have. A lot of those questions are in the spiritual world, and that's where we recognize that there's something greater than our minds, even though we're not too sure. So it becomes a question of faith and belief as to what you fill that void up with that will satisfy you and make you feel that you're part of something.
True. Now, blessed souls, we, from our history, we of the Jewish or Israelite Jewish nation, we have been documenting what has been going on in our people's history since basically the time of Abraham, and then now to Isaac and Jacob and Moses, and eventually the development and the full manifestation of the 12 tribes of Israel, who left Egypt and went up to the land of Israel, were exiled to Babylon, and then we went to a Persian exile and a Greek Median exile, and now we're currently in the last of the four exiles, as we understand it to be, from our own cultural and Mosaic Judaic perspective. We're in the last exile of the Roman exile. But we have this tradition that the idea of spreading awareness of the divine presence took place via the efforts, the sweat and toil of righteous souls, even after the destruction of the first and second temples. And these individuals were also successful in eliciting a level of godliness, elokus, shekhinah, divine presence, which is identified in the Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue, as Shochein Ad, which translates as He Creator who dwells forever until the most exalted realms, His name is holy. Now, there's kind of a paradox here, blessed souls, is that we say that He is the most exalted, but who dwells forever. But again, when we say He dwells, or the Creator who dwells, He dwells everywhere, because we see in the five books of Moses, He said Himself to Moses, the place is with me, hamakom iti, the place with me, all sense of space is with me. At the same time, too, we must humble ourselves to realize even if we somehow intellectually could occupy all space where the Creator is dwelling, still we must be resigned. It's nothing to be sad about. That still he is more exalted than any perception we may have of how he fills all space, because what he represents is a level of source of everything, which is higher than any perception, even of his names. And one of the ways that we understand the Creator is that which the Creator interacts with at the level that only Creator can understand become sanctified and holy. So it's mentioned that his name is holy. This is talking about the ineffable four-letter name. However, this type of understanding, again, is really, it's not something that a person can really internalize from a superficial ingestion just of the mere words that I'm saying. This requires of a person, if he or she are interested and have the free will to do so, and the free will to not to do so as well, is to think about these concepts, how, again, as Dennis mentioned, who causes or what is causing the sun to shine every day? It doesn't look like the sun is going to go to a retirement center for aged celestial illuminary beings. It keeps on doing what it has to be doing. The earth seems to be standing in its place. It doesn't look like the earth is going to go to some, you know, residence for tired planetary bodies. These type of things are to hopefully engage us in awareness which is beyond our own petty needs every day, and not to minimize those needs, but there is just something more than the day-to-day grind of life. And the art, I would say, we would put it in that terms, or the mode of service that very righteous, very conscious beings have carried out in their lifetimes, and these are people that we recognize, and even on the secular level, and amongst all the nations of the world. I'll give you an example. Leonardo da Vinci, who lived, I believe, up until the beginning of the 17th century, came up with designs which were way beyond the technological awareness of his generation. He created what could be considered primordial designs for the tank, for the helicopter, and other pieces of machinery, which his generation just wasn't adept enough. It's not to blame that generation. He had a vision of how to put concepts together to create what we would later identify as modern technology. In fact, he even, according to this documentary that I watched with my son, had even attempted at some level to actually initiate the first human attempt, as we know of, using pure technology to try and fly, although the effort didn't work. So, Dennis, how can we encourage people to, so to speak, think outside the box, but also be humbled by the idea that we can't think out of God's box?
It all comes from the realization of being human on Earth. And what happens here with us humans is a variation that changes from time to time. There's good times, there's bad times. But the realization must be understood by everybody that the spiritual world is a constant. No matter what time in history you're at, today, the future, any time in history, the spiritual world is a constant. We are in a state of change. We are humans. We are variables. And that variability is one of our weaknesses because we're not perfect, but we have to live with it anyway. But we subscribe to the idea of a permanent spiritual world that we can always relate to. When you have that realization, that gives you a little hook to hang on to and have hope for the future.
True. Dennis, this is interesting. We're actually getting some feedback from Rabbi Eliezer Goldstock from Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. And his response to our little dialogue right now is, I'll just translate it, Ein Ol Vado, there is nothing aside from him. What are you trying to say? And then he added, because there is nothing at all besides him, Creator. He is essence, and we are spiritual. True. But we as spiritual, we are spiritual beings in the material world. I think that was a song by Sting of the Police over 30 years ago. True, we are spiritual beings in the material world, but we have to use our material minds and hopefully access our material hearts to make sense of what's going on in this world. I'd like to give another example of how the Shekhinah can even manifest, and this is something which is backed up by the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shneur Zalman of Liadi, how a type of wisdom at some point or another is going to reflect a Torah value, and a Torah value is at some level of manifestation of the Shekhinah, divine presence. So here, this is a quote from JFK, And it goes like this, and Dennis, I'm happy to hear your feedback on this. Let us not seek the Republican answer or the Democratic answer, but the right answer. Let us not seek to fix the blame for the past. Let us accept our own responsibility for the future. Now, if I had not known that was from JFK, I would never think a politician, because that's what he was, he was a professional politician, the last portion of his life, would make such a statement, going beyond the Republican viewpoint, going beyond the Democratic viewpoint, the idea of personal responsibility, which is in fact, we were given the responsibility of stewarding the earth, and I'm sure this is something which could even go back to even an ancient wisdom, whether Kennedy was aware of it or not, where the idea of us being stewards as human beings is to accept the responsibility for our own future. Dennis, your take on this.
Well, the take is that there is no politics in the spiritual world. There's politics in the human world because we do change all the time. Things are evolving. And we sometimes create differentiations that may be meaningful to humans, but in the spiritual world, it has no real value. But we persist in doing these things because it's a distraction. However, John F. Kennedy did have a spiritual background, and he tried to mix that with his human part. And that's something that should be understood by everybody, that we have to settle our physical human side, at the same time recognize our spiritual side. Because if you don't, you're going to be lopsided. And if you as a human, you must be able to balance those things.
True. Blessed souls, thank you for that, Dennis. There is a purpose. There is an ultimate purpose for this creation. There is an ultimate purpose for all the cause and effect dimensions which take place in all the worlds. Briefly, one of the ways to describe the worlds in four general ways is the world of intellect, the world of thought, the world of speech, and the world of action. And eventually, as we all, as a part of a human film experience, become more aware of the ultimate purpose for this creation, and it becomes perceptible in the way that we can elucidate one to the other. Because righteous souls have come in the past, from ancient generations up until our generation, who were privy to access the Ruach of Nevuah, the spirit of prophecy, the Ruach of Ruach HaKodesh, the spirit of the divine inspiration. They're their constant toil to try to purify themselves from diminished levels of human consciousness, to purify themselves from perhaps their backgrounds, which did not initially give them access to pristine teachings of divine guidance. But through that, these righteous souls were able to work through their challenges in life. They were willing to take responsibility for their future and come to a point of understanding that it wasn't sufficient enough that they stay at some pristine level of elevated consciousness, but they share it with the rest of the world. And we see this, we've seen this, in the faiths of the world. We've seen this also to some degree as well. There have been great teachers of secular teachings who have meant only for the good of mankind. We have seen people stay in the medical field. I heard someone the other day, a well-established dietitian, nutritionist, a PhD, Dr. Gary Knoll, who mentioned how he, growing up in West Virginia, where his parents and family every day thought it was just part of the custom of that part of the country in America, that you end every meal with a cigarette and coffee, where ham and other fatty foods were a primary source of protein, and the desserts would be fatty, sugary, could even be fried goods. And he himself became a vegetarian, vegan, and a person promoting organic and healthy lifestyles, and he pleaded with his parents and his family to try to make lifestyle changes. And I think he mentioned, I said from his brothers, I don't think any of his close relatives made it past their early 60s, and most of them came down with diabetes, and coming down with diabetes was considered to be a normal thing. And he once had a talk with his parents, and his father took him outside of the house, and in their family cultural structure, which you know, which is an interesting structure, that there was an adult table and a children's table, which was then occupied by the children when they became younger adults. And his father told him he would be able to give his nutritional advice to his aunts and uncles and him and his mother, and it would be tolerated, but no way would it be accepted. And therefore, he should know that he would be, if he spoke in a respectful fashion, he could share this advice. And later he went on to say that he witnessed his family members get sick and die and suffer through different types of maladies because of their lack of proper lifestyles. And he said that what came out of it, he made a decision that if he couldn't help his family, at least he could help other people. So sometimes we can go about, you know, flying forth the banner of truth. And we see that many times at the level we understand it to be, and, you know, we're talking about Torah here, which I, as a member of the Jewish nation, humbly submit to you, blessed souls, this is a teaching of truth, of godliness. However, I am not the light, and I am not the truth, so I go through my daily struggles in trying to figure out how to elucidate and how to share it with you to perhaps make it more enticing to you that you should do your own research into the matter. So that being said, Dennis, what can we say to, again, to encourage people to realize it is upon themselves to take responsibility of their future, and while they're taking responsibility, they shouldn't be sidetracked by negative attitudes, which might try to say, don't take so much upon yourself in terms of trying to spread awareness.
Well, you brought up a good example of a reason why we should understand the spiritual world, because it will help our physical human world. And that is some common sense and some understanding of the spiritual world. You will be pointed in the right direction. And that's what people are missing. They're looking for a direction, and if you don't take into account the spiritual world, you can get lost in the human world.
True. And with that being said, bless us, we're about to round in the show. What we're talking about, again, when we talk about Shekhina, is that it manifests in various levels. And various righteous souls throughout the generations have been able to access this level of divine presence. And sometimes they even were not completely aware of that manifestation. As we see, there were cases where Moses was educated by the Most High, Elijah the prophet had to be educated, David was told via the prophet Nathan that he had made a mistake with the situation, with the way he conducted himself in that particular, with Bathsheba. So even the most righteous can have a point where they are aware of the divine presence, they're involved in revealing it, but at some point or another, even they themselves revert from being teacher and master of such teachings to student, needing further information, further communication from the Creator. But again, all this is because there's some sort of revelation taking place. So we're just going to end off again with this whole idea, is that the idea of Shekhinah relates to an idea of revelation, which is accessible through doing Torah, learning Torah, as we humbly suggest, and connecting to the Creator's commandments. Not that we should be filling up the upper worlds with sublime spirituality, but that people down here should realize everything. And that means everything that we see in this world is a manifestation at some level, whether it be from the inner countenance of the Creator or the outer countenance of the Creator, as some sort of manifestation of the Divine Presence Shekhinah. And again, I'm speaking in very broad strokes because there is a whole endeavor on how to elucidate this matter, which at this point I cannot do, especially because I am not a master of the subject. Again, I am merely a student of the subject. I'm an ongoing student of the subject. And I encourage anyone listening out there, be live or future archive versions, that we in fact can develop a relationship to the Creator by learning more about this idea of Shekhinah. Dennis, any last thoughts before we close out today's program?
Yes, everybody should get some personal satisfaction out of learning a little bit more about our spiritual world. It's there. You can't avoid it. It's there. Learn more about it.
True. That being said, blessed souls, that also acts as a the desire to want to learn more about the Creator will bring us into this godly experience, which many people might not consider to be a godly experience, but it is identified as, in fact, is identified as an actual word in the Torah in describing Moses as being a humble man. He was called an anav. And this, the song we're going to sing about right now is connecting to that idea, that experience of humility. Not that we should be walking bent over forwards or backwards and being so meek to the point where a little wind could blow us over to the side. No. It is an appreciation of the gift of life and the talents we've been given, not necessarily developed directly by ourselves, but bequeathed us by our ancestors. And we've been brought into contact with righteous teachers, righteous mentors, and family members and friends who are encouraging us to keep the flame of humility burning so we can burn away all forms of arrogance, which is one of the impediments to true godly knowledge of the Creator, which is afforded us to, again, through the written oral Torah traditions of Israel. So we're ending off again with Humility by David Dom, who will help us get back home to realize that Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Our divine image will help us get from the scrimmage. And remember, blessed souls, you have got to be good because you are good. I'll tell you why you are good already, because Atev Tov Lehetev, it is the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator who is the source of good put you on this earth and make it worth your while. It's already worth the Creator's while that you're here because he decided you should be here. Make it worth your while to reveal the goodness in yourself, and may you have the merit to cause others to reach for the goodness with themselves and to share that goodness and to make this world a place of goodness. And let us remove, and let us have a, when it comes that we come before the heavenly court after 120 years on earth, we'll say, oh, such a human being that stands before this heavenly court was involved in trying to remove jealousy and hatred and unnecessary competition among the ranks of the human family experience. This is Humility by David Dom, everyone. Enjoy and take care.
love me then, oh, let your response begin.